This is the Kashrus Shir involving Milchika products. Shalom Aleichem. Monday night Kashrus Shir from the Rav Tanuva about Milchika products.
I'll speak to you later.
I think I have to change right after the shir. I can yell that to everybody.
Oh, that's
okay. Retired, but he's worked for over 20 years with Rav Landau's Vadat Zemshin, our best in the Bnei Brak. He heads a company called Kosher Masters, and he still travels the world doing kashrus. And also one of the shiurim that will be intriguing and halacha lemaisa about a lot of things that are considered kashrus things of the day. His particular expertise is flavorings, but that involves a lot of what goes into the ingredients of almost everything we eat. Tonight we have a rare treat. Tonight's guest is Rav Yaakov Boro. He's one of the members of the Kashrus team of Tanuva, the largest dairy in Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbanim there are considered by many as experts in the Yanei Kashrus that have to do with dairy. Tonight we'll get a little taste of what their lives are like and what they do to bring us the Kashrus that we enjoy. So without further delay, I'll take the opportunity with Shustam Oed Asra to introduce Rav Yaakov Boro to Tanuva.
Thanks very much, and first of all, Yishkoyach to Birshut Mar Adasra and all, and the whole Kahal. Thanks very much to Rabbi Chiel for all the work that he does in Kashrut. Just for a second, for a commercial for next week, Rav Bezalel Schutz, just you should know, a lot of people in Kashrut learn a lot from him, so you should know it's worth it. I work in Tanuva. Basically, I would describe it as every kashrut organization has an ingredient man that's responsible for looking at ingredient issues and deciding what's proof for kashrut regila here, what's proof for mahadrin. Of course, I'm not doing these kinds of decisions on my own. I have Rav Weinman standing behind me, and the different Mahadrin organizations that have to approve everything that we're doing. But I'm the one that's getting them the information and organizing in terms of Tanuva what is approved for which kashrut. There's a lot of different things that go on in milk and Tanuva, and it's 1993 or so, I think. Can everybody hear me? 1993 or so, Rav Weitman came to Tnuva, and he was sort of a one-man show at that point. And now, Baruch Hashem, we've got, I guess, all together between 15 and 20 guys. It varies a little bit with the seasons, but 15, 20 guys that are working in Kashrut and Tnuva. It's a very serious Kashrut organization, and I'll give you a little bit of a taste of what goes on with milk products. Some of it is shayach to anywhere in the world. Some of it is more shayach to Israel. And some of it is shayach to any kashrus organization, even outside of milk. So we'll just start with one issue. Just, I think that most people here know this, but just a lot of times people wonder, why is it in the Eretz Yisrael? There's such a thing, you know, you have a lot of different levels of kashrut. And if you, let's say, if a company has badatz idach haridit on their products, so why does it have to also say that it's kasher bashkachat rabanu? So, basically speaking, I think that you all know, when you see a product that says kasher bashkachat rabanut, so-and-so, Netanya, or Hovot, whatever it'll be, it's kashrut regila, or sometimes it can be, like in the case of Tnuva, Rav Chevra, Rav Weitman, right, kasher bashkachat Rav Weitman, Rav Tnuva, or whatever it is, that's basic kashrut. And by law, the Rabbanut HaRashit said, not the Rabbanut HaRashit, Medinat Yisrael says that who has the right to say that a product is kasher, the word kasher, that's the Rabbanut HaRashit Yisrael, the central Rabbanut, and they appoint each Rabbanut in their town, or in the case of Tnuva, Arav Chevra, to give kashrut. In other words, a company can't only have a badatz to give their kashrut, a private badatz to give their kashrut, because it's illegal to say this product is kasher badatz idach haridi. So that's why you don't see the words on products, unless there's a mistake, actually. You don't see on a product made in Israel kasher bashkachat badatz idach haridi. You see kasher bashkachat rabanut so-and-so, and then you have a semel kashrut of badatz idach haridi, or any other badatz. That's it has to be an addition. The company, if they want to claim their products are kasher, they have to say it's kasher bashkachat rabanut, or some other body that has rights to give kashrut, and then the company of their own volition can add on any other kashrut that they want, provided that they actually, you know, are making their products under that badatz. But in other words, that's what I mean by saying kosher is a legal term. A private organization can't use it. So that's why it doesn't matter how many badatzim you have on a product. You have to also have the basic kashrut of Rabbanut, because any company that wants to say their products are kasher has to say this product has kashrut Rabbanut. Okay? Just to bring, basically, the two kashriot mahadrin in Tnuva. Of course, there's billions throughout Israel, what's Mahadrin Kashriot, but in Tnuva, there's Badatz Idach Haridit on some Mahadrin products, and what's called Vadat Mahadrin Tnuva, which is a mix of various Mahadrin Kashriot, Zgiadat Bells, Tofer Bnei Brak, Rav Mordechai Gross from Bnei Brak, who's well known in the Kashrut world, and Rav Weitman. Okay, that was just by way of general introduction. You talk about milk, so
it's a general question. Sorry, but really, does the Rabbanut ever, and I don't mean to imply anything's wrong, does the Rabbanut ever piggyback on the back of, like, the Badats, the Haredis? Like, they won't send in their person, they'll be selected from the Badats?
There may be such a thing. I would say it more properly that the Badats and the Rabbanut will use sometimes the same Mashgiach. Sometimes not, and sometimes yes. In Tnuva, there's a Mashgiach in each dairy that is the same mashgiach for the kashrut regila and vadat mahadrin, and there's a special badatz mashgiach, badatz idach haridit mashgiach. But in other places, I deal a lot of times with other companies that have a badatz mashgiach who is the same mashgiach as the rabbanut mashgiach. So each place, it's, you know, works out in different ways. Okay, raw milk, right? Generally speaking, milk, the pashtus is a kosher food. You know, right? The dinim. You know, by the way, when I mention dinim, or I'll bring a couple of makorot here. It's not really my forte. I'm very far from being a posek, but Baruch Hashem, there are plenty of people, Rav Weitman and other rabbanim in Tnuva, that are. I mean, I'm not talking about Vadat Mahadri, and Vadat Zidach Haridit, Baruch Hashem, there's plenty of people to pass in the Shailas. I'm learning from them and presenting some of the issues in their name. You know, the din is pashtut hayotzei mina mutar, mutar yotzei mina asur, asur. If you have a kosher animal, it produces kosher milk. If you have a non-kosher animal, it produces non-kosher milk. So l'chora, milk is kosher. In other words, milk generally in the world is cow milk, let's say from normal countries. So bepashtut, a cow is kosher and milk is kosher. So what we'll talk about in the start is when I say raw milk, you know, it's two different things. There's raw milk that Tnuva doesn't really own any farms. I mean, there's many farms around Eretz Yisrael, and Tnuva is buying milk from those farms. They're coming into to a Tnuva factory. You know, in the farm, you see a lot of cows. You see milk, a couple of milk tanks, and then a truck will come and take milk from milk tanks. You know, sometimes you can see them on the road. The milk tankers on the road. They come to a processing plant. So there's some hashgacha there's some kashrut issues on the raw milk that's happening at the farm, and there's other kashrut issues that are happening at the processing plant. So, and in Tnuva you have mashkichim that are mashkichei lefatot that are dealing with a kashrut issue on the farm, and there's different mashkichim that are dealing with kashrut issue in the plant. Right, so I, like being an ingredient person, I'm actually more aligned with the mashgichei machlavot, the people in the plants that are dealing with seeing ingredients coming in and what you add into milk. I have a counterpart who's dealing with all the milk issues. But in any case, when I say raw milk, the kashrut issues dealing with milk itself, and not yet, we'll see a little bit later on, what happens, what you add into milk.
I just became an olos hadash. Drinking milk many years ago, 5-6 years ago, claiming that all milk is a shayla of kashrus because the animal, but it's a cow that it came from, and I don't understand what he meant.
It's a little bit beyond us, just because what Rav Shechter holds is has to do with treifot and has to do with you know, when you find statistically you can find a lot of treifot. It's a little bit beyond our thing.
Well,
what we're assuming that there's a rove of behemos that are not treifot, and there are big rabbanim that talk on both sides. Rav Shechter is a bit of a mute, I think, of a dea, because most people, all the mahadrin and sherim here that are giving on milk, they're on the tzad that milk is mutar, because you have to assume that rove behemot are not treifot.
Do you rely on movement as the oraisa?
Well, that's clear. In other words, again, I'm not opposed to it at all, but it's clear that you rely on the roven. You know, when you kill somebody, and you know, when Beit Din, because you assume that he's not a treifa himself, you know, whatever. No, there's all kinds of rove you rely on in Doraita. But I think it's a little bit beyond certainly my knowledge, you know, and also it's a little bit beyond our discussion. We're going on the tzad that milk is ki karon, is mutar. You don't have to be choshish for the treifa because it's a rove. And then beyond that, there are other issues that you can deal with that you do worry about. And your issue is an issue for poskim, for big poskim, to talk about whether, you know, keikaron, you can be matzah milk or not.
Also, in America, the operations issue is much worse than the other.
Right. So we'll talk about the operations as we go on. Right. So there you see the third one here. Right. So the first issue is chalav Shabbat, which is, of course, an issue for us here in Eretz Yisrael much more than in Chutz La'aretz, because in Chutz La'aretz, who cares that you know, let's say if you make Chalav Yisrael, well, I guess if you make Chalav Yisrael also in Chutz La'aretz, but here you have mostly Jewish-owned farms, and there's an Isser of Chaliva b'Shabbat. So how do you deal with you have to milk the cows on Shabbat? There's no choice. If you want to continue to get milk from a cow, you have to milk them on Shabbat. So how are you going to so you have to deal with that somehow. So that's Chalav Shabbat is one issue. Second issue is Chalav Nachri, and we'll talk about later why we deal with Chalav Nachri here in Israel. And third issue is operations. The Rav just mentioned that there are certain operations that happen on cows that could create problems of treifot. Machloket, whether that's you have to be choshesh or not, but we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. So first of all, Chalav Shabbat. So how does you know, Chalav Shabbat is something that Jews throughout the centuries, if they had a couple of cows, they had to deal with it. How do they milk their cows on Shabbat? I mean, there's an Isser, you know, there's an Isser Mistama Mitzad Dash, that you can't separate the milk from a cow on Shabbat. It has nothing to do, I mean, and aside from the electricity issues, that today no one is milking the cows like this, you know, for industry, you're milking cows through machines, but you have an Isser of separating milk from a cow, so how do you deal with it? If you're, and there are, Baruch Hashem, there are religious kibbutzim, or, you know, moshavim, that deal with this, and throughout the ages they have to deal with it. So how do you deal with it? So the simplest way to deal with it is through Chalivat Goy, that just added in here, Tzar Balei Chaim, because to some extent, and again, I'm relying on my Rabbanim and can't pass for myself, but to some extent, Tzar Balei Chaim allows... Amir El Goy. In other words, you can, in certain circumstances, you can have tell a Goy to do the Chaliva on Shabbos, because there's Tzar Balei Chaim, you have to milk the cow. So therefore, you can, in certain circumstances, you're allowed to tell the Goy to do the milking. So if you have a Goy, the truth is, Lamaisa, very often, it's the Goyim that are doing the milking here, because they're Thailandim that are in the farms. And then, of course, you have to deal with the issue. Why does that milk not become chalav nochri? But that's an issue. In other words, you can have pikuach on them. It's easy enough, either, well, we'll see as we go on, but it's easy enough to have pikuach on this chaliva, that it doesn't become chalav nochri. But once you have a goy doing it, he's not doing, you don't have somebody doing the lachas, you're not being cholev Shabbat v'isur. The key is to make it chaliva v'shabbat v'heter, right? Well, there's two ways you can deal with it. Either make sure you're not getting Chalav Shabbat, or make sure that the milk was milked on Shabbat beheter. So if it's Ayidei Goy and it's Pipikuach, then it's Chaliva b'Shabbat, then it's Chaliva beheter. And then anybody can take that milk, because it was milked in a heter way. Another way of dealing with it is to have this not collecting milk or grama, like a combination of, usually it works in a combination of, let's say you have a some sort of a special machshir, a special machine that is some sort of grama, that it doesn't start milking immediately when the cow comes into the milking shed. There's a little bit of netek in smile, a little bit of a time break between this, what a Jew would do and when the milking starts. And you combine that with some sort of ibud. Like usually, let's say, you know, like in the same way that, let's say, you know, you say that, you know, there's a difference between squeezing a lemon on something solid and squeezing a lemon on, you know, and taking out the juice. If it's solid to liquid, then back to solid. So some poskim are matir. So if you translate that here, you start milking ibud. And then you're not collecting the milk, and then afterwards it's diverted through a system into the milking tank. So akitzur, it's a little bit complicated, but the basic idea is that you start by not collecting the milk, you're doing it also through a grama, and you do some sort of combination of that, and there are many rabboni that are matir. So some prefer to have chalivat goy. I think that Rav Eichmann told me that Rav Kook actually was extreme. Even though Rav Kook is usually known as someone who, you know, wanted the kibbutzim to have Jewish labor, but he was very machmir at this point. He said you have to have chalivat goy. And other rabbanim are matir using different machines, and you can collect the milk in that way, and then your chaliva b'shabbat itself, you could actually use that milk for anything. What happens if you didn't do any of this? The standard kibbutz, letzareinu, let's say if there's, you know, my guess on my part is between 500 and 700 kibbutzim that are, or kibbutzim or moshavim that are giving milk to the milk shuk in Israel. So, you know, a large percentage of those, letzareinu, are not shomrei Shabbat. And let's say they're milking their milk as regular on Shabbat. They're maybe by a goy, maybe by Israel, maybe a goy is milking, but a Jew is doing something with the machines there, adjusting the machines. So basically speaking, what happens if you can't, if it's not bepikuach, if it's not under hashkacha, that no Jew did any malacha? What's the din of that milk? that guy, the Baal HaRefet, right, the owner of the Refet, he did an Isur by allowing his milk, his cows to be milked on Shabbat, the Isur. Because that Asur the milk. Right? So the Pashtu the din is, if it would be, right, is that Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Bashar Shabbat Mizid, Asur Lo Lilam, Lacharim Utar Lutzai Shabbat Yad. Right? But Pashtut is that after Shabbos, some would say B'chei Shiasu, some would say Nak Shiasu, whatever it would be, the Pashtut's din is it should be mutar to somebody else. To him, he did it, let's say B'meizid, it might be Asur Le'olam. For other people, it should be mutar after Shabbat. On Shabbos, he can't, but after Shabbos, it would be mutar. The different posts came through the ages that said that if it's done on a mass scale, and it's not just that it happens to be 1 week that you buy milk from a guy who milked a Shabbat B'Isur, and it's different. It's like making it always doing it with his understanding that this is how he's milking. So some people say that's a problem. Even if you say that the Pashtus din is that it should be mutar, so you say that is problematic. Maybe it's different if it's done on a mass scale. So basically, what happens is, at least in Tnuva, is that products with kashrut regila can use chalav Shabbat. Chalav Shabbat means chalav shana chalav Shabbat b'isur. Of course, it's not all that, but you have to assume that any product with kashrut regila could have in it milk that was milked on Shabbat b'isur. According to this hetter that we're saying that la'achirim is mutar motzai Shabbat, and for Mahadri products, you don't have such milk. Either you're taking milk from Shabbat, but it was milk beheter, or you're not taking milk from Shabbat at all. You have pikuach, part of what I talked about before, the mashkichim that are going around Refatot, part of what they're doing is going around on Sunday, Monday, seeing when each individual farm is done with their Shabbat milk. When the mechal, when the milk tank is clean on the farm, they'll know once it's clean, the next milk coming in is going to be Mahadrin milk. Right?
Without mentioning names, but are there Mahadrin milks which will take the first two to leave it going?
As far as I know, I mean, in Tnuva I don't know of such a thing, and in others I just don't know. So, the Pashtus not. I mean, you know.
You're not even the first.
Right. In other words, not relying on the Shulchan Aruch here.
No. Will the Mahadrin milk accept the first two in the Chalivos Goy?
Oh, yes. Mahadrin milks will, yes. I'm sorry. They will accept Chalivat Goy, and will accept, not some will accept this. But Chalivat Goy, basically speaking, at least as far as I know, everyone, you know, Banatzi Nacharadid and Mahadrin both accept. Right, and it has to be pikuach so that, you know, you make sure. So that depends on whether it's a goy or a Jew that's the owner, and then, you know, depending on how often a mashgiach has to come in.
You said that the milk has gone out of the tank already, like I said, like Monday or Tuesday. Is it necessary to have to clean the tank also?
For their own reasons, they have to clean the tank. Between, sure. The question was, well, actually, maybe say your question. I'm not sure I got it.
I was wondering if they have to clean the tank in between, because
there's a bunch of positions. Well, the question was whether you have to also, in other words, the mashgiach, let's say, is coming on a Monday to see that the tank is clean, and therefore the milk from that point on, from this particular farm, is already mahadri. So the question was, does it also have to be cleaned? Because after all, lechor, it's batel b'shishim. So the truth is, you don't get into the question so much because for their own purposes, they have to clean it well. Because of, you know, milk is a microbiological, you know, problem when you don't, you know, so it has to be cleaned, yeah.
What are the names of the gods?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll talk about that in a second. Sorry.
The regular milk depends on, you can also,
It could depend. No.
Thursday is definitely not Shabbos.
No.
If you can repeat it.
Right. Okay. So you know what? Let's since you're talking about products already, let's just answer this question first. Just in the bottom here, I mentioned some products that are, for example, a chashash of chalav Shabbat milk, meaning milk that you buy in stores and bags, what's the difference between Mahavri milk and Kashrut Regila milk? So in terms of milk itself, the only difference is this issue, Chalav Shabbat. It's not Chalav Nachri, it's not problems with operations or anything like that, it's this issue of Chalav Shabbat. Same thing with, let's say, Amek and Gilboa, which are basically the same cheeses in terms of ingredients as, you know, Tiran, Yerushalayim, Achuza, but the difference is the milk. The difference is that this milk is bepikuach, that there's no chalav that was nechalav b'shabbat b'isur, and these cheeses could have Shabbat milk in it, problematic Shabbat milk in it. Okay? When we talk, the question here was about milk. Remind me again.
If I can know by the day of the week, Wednesday, okay. Thursday milk.
Okay, the answer is no, that you don't know. Well, the answer is sort of no and sort of yes. But the question was, can you know if you go to a store on Thursday that it's not likely that there's any Shabbos milk there because it's already Thursday? So the answer is no, because it depends when the milk was... The milk could be stored... It can't be stored on the farm very long, and it can't be stored in the machlava very long, but it could be stored long enough to make it a problem, so that you don't really know if you buy Friday or Thursday if there's a problem. There is a, you know, there is on every bag of milk, it says a date. It says, you know, the date that pak tokif, the expiry date, and it says a letter there. And the letter is the day of the packing. So, theoretically speaking, and you have to be careful with this, because anything could change, then I can't come back and tell... You know, sort of can't let the genie out of the bottle. But basically speaking, if you see today a bag of milk that says on it, hey, so that means it's Thursday. So in terms of, it's not possible that that's Shabbat milk, because it's really a limited number of days that can go from the milking until packing. Not when you're buying it in the store, but when it's packed. But, first of all, that's certainly not true when you have a week that has Yom Tov in it, because then Yom Tov is the same problem of Shabbos. And secondly, as I say, I can tell you that may be true today. I don't know if it's going to be true tomorrow. So, you know, it's true that Lamaisa, there's a lot of Mahadrin milk that gets packed in non-Mahadrin containers for one reason or another. But it's hard to say that there's a hard and fast rule, other than the fact that I can tell you as of this minute, hay and vav on a milk bag means that it's not Shabbos milk. That's all I can tell you this minute. Okay, let's move on. Chalav Nachri. Okay, we talked about Chalav Shabbat. That's one issue. Again, all what we're doing right now is talking about raw milk. How long do we have? Okay. One issue with raw milk is what we talked about Chalav Shabbat. Second issue is Chalav Nachri. So the standard issue of Chalav Nachri, right? The Mishnah and Avodah Zarah, Chalav Shechalavo Akum Ve'en Yisrael Ro'ehu. Right? Not that a goy is did the chaliva. That's not the problem. The problem is a goy did a chaliva and a Jew didn't see him. Right? Because you can have all over Israel. You have men, like we said, many Thailandim are doing the chaliva. But you have Pikuach, that changes it into Chalav Yisrael. Just like in Chutz Laaretz, you could have, you know, our parents and grandparents could have gone to the refet and seen the chaliva. That's also called Yisrael, right? It's not, the question is not who physically is doing the chaliva. The question is, does somebody see what the chaliva is? And then, of course, the million-dollar question is, what is ro'ehu? What does it mean that somebody has to see it? Does it mean a Jew is present in the farm? Does it mean a Jew can be present? They have no idea when he's going to come. He could come in at any point. Doesn't mean a Jew can see via computer. Let's just skip for a second, like that. Right? So that's in the office next to mine. This is my counterpart in the Hashkachan milk itself. And he has, this is actually a girsa going back about 7-8 years. It's much more Meshuchlal today, but this is, in other words, he's seeing the Gabe various things, also Chalav Shabbat, and also Chalav Nachri, he's able to check, but talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Is it enough for a Jew to see it through a computer?
do we say that bichlal is no chashash in today's world, let's say in a normal country, which is basically the truth. In a normal country, you talk about United States or Western Europe at least, right? It's, no one is milking camels or pigs or whatever, or horses. They are. Sometimes they are milking these things, but usually they can get a better price selling it as horse milk rather than selling it as cow's milk, so they have no incentive to mix it in. So let's say, it's not that it's impossible that it could happen, but on by and large, it doesn't happen. I mean, people tell stories about, you know, that they were in this little town, they did used to do it, they used it as a preservative and things like that. But the Pashtut is that the Pashtut doesn't happen, and it, you know, the Pashtut doesn't happen. So is that enough? It still might not be enough. You have a gzera of Chazal. If Chazal made a gzera, do you say, well, the gzera doesn't matter, the reason applies or not? Or do you say, gzera could apply, couldn't apply? So that's, you know, machloket, but machloket poskim also. Is a government inspection, is that enough? Because all I have to do is there has to be, we have to see it. Does seeing mean, the Gemara says itself, right, it's clear in Halacha, he doesn't have to see it physically. He has to know that the goy has to know that he could come in, right? So maybe it's enough if the government says, this is inspected, right? That's the basis of Rav Moshe's Heter, right? So all of these things, the question is, right? Like my boss, Rav Eichmann, always says, you know, Chalav Nachri is Asur. That's clear. If something has a din of Chalav Nachri, that's a Gzera Drabanan. There's no question. Question is, in the situation today, do we say that either, like Rav Moshe says, Chalav accompanies, right? Is that the same thing as Chalav Nachri? Or is it not? Because the gzera of Chazal didn't apply, or wasn't a gzera, or whatever exactly the lamdus is, chalav nachri is usur. The question is, does this stuff that some people eat and it's kosher, and the OU gives a hechshatid and the OK gives a hechshatid, does that have a din that doesn't have a din of chalav nachri? For what reason doesn't it? So for one of these reasons. In any case, all of the above. What, before we jump to that for a second, all of the above is a question. How far you take it, and basically speaking, so any Mahadrin product, again, I can only talk about Truva, I assume it's the same in all the others. Any Mahadrin product can't have Chalav Nachri in it because it's going to be based on one of these Heterim, one of the Heterim of no Chashash or government inspection. A Jew seeing through via computer, so that there are big Gedolim that have said that that's okay under the right circumstances. Not so easy. It's this whole system is very expensive and very, you have to know exactly where to do it, how you can do it. This fellow doesn't just sit in a computer room. He goes out to the refatot quite often also, and he goes every place that he sees on the computer, he's also there a lot of times. So it's not like such a simple system. A couple of years ago people said, oh, soon everything's going to be a computer, you're not going to have any problems with Chalav Nachri because you can have so easily Chalav Yisrael. It's not so easy. It's sometimes Rav Eichmann says it's more expensive this way. It's a hidur to do it this way because there's a lot of things you can see that your average mashgiach can't see.
So Tanuva does not rely on the last two things.
So Tanuva for Kashrut Regila. So we'll see in a second what exactly happens at Kashrut Regila. So let's start with Mahadrin. You don't rely on what's called quotes Chalav Nachar. In other words, won't use anything below this line. A Jew seeing via computer has been paskin by Rabbi Yashiv and other rabbanim that's hashgacha. It has to be done in the right way. You can't just take somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, but as long as you're doing it the right way, that's hashgacha. So any of these things, mashgiach that's yotzei v'nichnas, under the circumstances that's paskin by the rabbanim that this is enough, mashgiach that, or somebody seeing on a computer and knowing what to look at and what to look for, that'll be, anything above that will be mahadri.
What if you know that there are no trace animals on the farm?
So that's, you know, the question was, what if you know there's no trace animals on the farm? So that's one of the heterim that was said by the poskim through the ages to say, Chalav Nachri is not a problem, but this is not relying on that because all these farms don't have Davar Tameh, But so it's still, Mahadrin will go a step further and say, there's got to be actual pikuach. Avkat Chalav Nachri. Now, there's a separate heter. People sometimes get a little bit mixed up between Chalav Nachri and Avkat Chalav Nachri. Avkat just means powder. And ironically enough, sometimes it's more difficult to worry about the kashrut of Avkat Chalav Nachri than Chalav itself, than the liquid milk. Because whenever something is powdered, you have to worry about where it was powdered. A lot of times in Chutz La'aretz, you have companies that dry anything. Dry soup, they dry chicken, they dry chicken soup and beef and this and that, and once in a while they dry milk. So then it becomes difficult because it's very difficult to clean and kasher like a dryer. So sometimes actually Avkat Chalav Nachri is worse than regular Chalav Nachri because you're worried about all kinds of ancillary kashrus issues that could come up. But lahalacha, but assuming that you take care of that, so Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank said, I don't know if it was only him, but said in his name that the gzeira of Chalav Nachri was on liquid milk and not on powder, and that's a different heter than Rav Moshe's heter. Now, it doesn't have to do with, you know, with saying that the government inspection is somehow an anansadi or anything. It has to do with the fact that there's a difference between powdered milk and liquid milk. And the Rabbanut Harashit follows that psak for kashrut regilah. The Rabbanut Harashit says, you as a producer, you can use Avkat Chalav Nachri in Israel, and we can say it's kosher, kashrut regilah, but you cannot use liquid milk from Chalav Nachri, and you can't use a product that's made from liquid milk. So that's why I wrote here, let's say, Philadelphia brand cream cheese. You notice, if you see in stores, Philadelphia brand cream cheese from the Alter Haim, you know, with an OKD on it, so it doesn't have on it any Shu'a Rabbanut Harashit Israel, because it's made from, it's coming not from powdered milk, it's made from liquid milk, and that's something that Rabbanut Harashit is not willing to give any shore for. They won't authorize that. So that's why, for the most part, when you see a product that's kashrut regilah and it's made from Chalav Nachri, again, Chalav Nachri in quotes, in other words, Chalav companies or whatever heter you're going to use, it's afkah, because the Rabbanut Harashit won't, it's not that it's not here. I've seen Philadelphia Baron cream cheese here, whatever. Some of it is here, but it won't. A company that's making stuff, that's making products here, and making it kasher, and they say that it's kasher b'shkachat haravanut, so they have to. Oh, if they're, we'll see in a minute why they would want to. Why in the world you need to use? You don't need to, but why one would want to use Avkat Chalav Nachri in Israel? It's because it only can be this Avkat Chalav Nachri and not Chalav Nachri itself, because Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank held that it was more of a that there was a cool of Avkat Chalav Nachri, and then you could, the Rabbanut Harashit says for Kashrut Regilah, not for Mahadrin, you can use that. Of course, I always say that it's important to know then that, like I said before, the point of Avkat milk, you could take milk and dry it, and then you have. It's not so simple, but let's say, make believe it was simple. Take milk and you dry it, you have powder. And it's very useful to have that, because instead of sending milk, which is 85% or whatever, water, you take out the water, and then a bag, it's much easier to transport a bag of powder than a tank load of liquid milk, right? So, but the problem is, does somebody, you can't just say something is milk powder, and so Avkat Chalav Nachri, I'm not makbid, so it's okay. You have to make sure that somebody's checked that plant in Chutz La'aretz that's doing that, and made sure that they're not drying other usher things. I mean, it happens. You know, Rav Eichmann was at a plant where they use animal fat and dry milk on the same line. So, and the, you know, this is something that has nothing to do with Chalav Nachri, not Chalav Nachri. This is kashrut. It has to be kosher to make sure that somebody's checking that this is, you know, that it's coming in with a heksha. I can't tell you that in Tzruva, we're very makbid, Baruch Hashem, that whatever has kashrut regilah, that has Avkat Chalav Nachri, that's coming in with a good heksha, that somebody's worrying about the basic kashrus issues.
What does the ingredient have to say on the product? Will it say Avkat Chalav?
Get that in 1 second. Let's skip this in a second. We'll come back to that. But here, today, this was not historically true. as of 2 years ago, let's say, 2-3 years ago, you could have products with kashrut regila that wouldn't say anything on them. The fact that some manufacturers wrote it made an impression in the public that if it's not written, it's not there, and it wasn't true. Not in Tnuva, not in Strauss. I know that because I know in Tnuva there were kashrut regila products that didn't say anything about Chalav Machri, and Strauss also. Today, as of about 2 years ago, the Rabbanut Rashit made a blanket rule that all manufacturers have to mention where there is the use of Avkat Chalav Machri, because again, liquid Chalav Machri they won't approve, but once there's using Avkat Chalav Machri, they say it must be written next to the kashrut. So that, I can tell you about Tnuva that it's true today. In other words, all products of Tnuva that have Avkat Chalav Machri, it'll say next to the kashrut, it'll say something like Kasher Bashkachat Rabbanut or Rashut Yisrael or Rav Tnuva, whatever it says, Mechil Avkat Rechivei Chalav Machri. Right? So that's why if you go to a, if you can see this a similar product, let's say you say Yoplait yogurt. If you go and you see it in a regular store, 99% of it is kashrut regila, and you pick it up, you'll see every single one of them. It says on it, Mechil Avkat Rechivei Chalav Machri, next to the kashrut. And if you go to a Mahadrin kind of store, you'll see the Yoplait is a Badatz Yoplait, and clearly it doesn't have that. It has the different Miatzvim instead of, you know, this Avkat Chalav Machri. But just let's jump back for a second. So, why is it that who needs Chalav Machri in Israel? Right? Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of cows here. We have milk powder plants. Tnuva has two milk powder plants to make Avkat Chalav. So, why does anybody need to import milk powder? And the truth is, Tnuva, with its two milk powder plants, has to import milk powder. Tnuva imports. It's all Chalav Yisrael, but they have to import because Baruch Hashem, our country is Zad Chalav Udvash and also very hot. And so the price of raw milk in Israel is much higher than some other countries. It has to do with the feed. It's not like New Zealand where you have cows that are out in the wild and eating a lot of grass or whatever. You have to give a lot, you have to supplement the grass that cows eat in order to have them produce milk. So it ends up, and it's much drier, and so you don't have, you know, so the more dry, the less milk a cow can produce. And so the price of raw milk is actually much higher in Israel than in other places. And therefore it's also worth it sometimes to import milk powder from outside of Israel. Happens to be that in Tnuva's case, all the milk powder that's imported is Chalav Yisrael, actually. There's productions of... later on we'll do that. We'll see later on a picture of a friend of mine who goes as part of a kashrut team to Chutz Laaretz to do a tremendous amount of hashgacha on... I mean, you know, this fellow is incredibly dedicated mashgiach that does Chalav Yisrael powder in Chutz Laaretz, and sometimes you have to do that because of the costs of operating, the cost of making the milk powder, the cost of using the milk powder is just enough that it makes sense sometimes that you have to import aside from actually making it here. That's one reason. But then there's a second reason, milk proteins. And just explain for a second, when you have milk is a mixture of a lot of different things. It has water, I mean, naturally, you don't add milk, you know, the stories about how much milk does Tnuva add into the, how much water does Tnuva add to the milk, it's not true. There's no, in other words, at this point, there's no, water's not added into milk. Milk is milk. But milk naturally has over 80% water in it, right? So, in addition to that water, the natural water in milk, there are proteins, there's fat, shamenet, there's minerals, there's lactose, right? And that makes up, that's a mixture of what milk is. So it turns out that the most active part of the milk, the most usable part of the milk for as an ingredient is proteins. What's called in Hebrew chelbon, and in English proteins, right? Proteins, I don't know the chemistry, but it turns out that proteins, if you know how to separate them from milk and you know how to mix them in different ways, because milk has a couple of different proteins, you can get an ingredient that will affect on a good way the taste and the texture of a product. So in other words, it sounds like, oh, I have all this milk, so what's the problem? I'll make whatever I want. So it turns out that there are companies that for years and years and years have studied how you separate these proteins out and how you mix them and what you mix them with and how you affect them with temperature. And it turns out that the technologists in Tnuva tell me, we don't know what exactly they do. We don't know how they're able to do it. We don't have this technology here. You know, Emirat Hashem, hopefully in 10 years, maybe we will. But they don't know how to do it right now. And there's these companies that for years and years and years, and I write here that, corporate secrets, you know, because it's really true. A lot of these companies, they don't want to give out their secrets. You have to make sure you're getting it with a good hechsher so that the hechsher knows how to get the information that they need from them. Because again, all of these things are coming in powder form. They could have other chashot other than the chalav nachri. They could have kvina sachum questions, all kinds of different questions. And so these, it has to come in with a good hechsher. But that kind of stuff, that kind of protein, could very well, in the case that I know, in Tnuva yogurts, let's say, no one in Israel knows how to make it. And so they make it, and so it has to come in with a good hechsher. But that's why a manufacturer will be interested in using chalav nachri bichlal, because you might think, well, what do they need it for? The answer is, there's certain technologies that are just not available, just not known here. It's more developed in Europe than it is in the United States also, I think. So, but in any case, that's a problem, and the types of products that have these types of things are yogurts, cream cheeses, fake cheese is what sometimes, I hope nobody owns a pizzeria here, but sometimes in pizzerias they use these fake, sort of like a fake cheese that's made of milk protein and not of true cheese. So it affects the taste and the texture of these types of products, and therefore there would be an interest in making these things with Afkat Chalav Nachri. There are companies that have succeeded in finding some sorts of proteins that are appropriate for using these products that are Chalav Yisrael. It's difficult, it's very expensive, and sometimes it's not the same level as what's made in Chutz La'aretz. So I assume that at some point in the next decade or so, there will be a possibility of making these things as Chalav Yisrael. And then there will still be the issue of costs, but at least the technological issue of quality, of how you make it, will probably be solved, I would guess. Okay, so let me just finish this thing and then we'll get to the questions. How do I know it contains Afkan Chalav Nachri, right? What could have it? So if you buy Mahadrin, then you don't have a problem, because all the Mahadrin Hechsherim don't give, again, I can't speak for all, I can just say, I assume that that's true, so that's certainly true. Anything Mahadrin doesn't have Afkan Chalav Nachri. Today, the Rabbanu Rashid, as we said before, requires that you have to, even a Kashrut Regila product. So if you look at Gvinat Emek, it won't say it on it because it doesn't have it. But if you look at Yoplait yogurt, it will say it on it because it does have it. Sometimes it'll say in like Elite, sometimes on the chocolate bars, although I've heard that they're supposed to change to, there is some sort of rumor that Elite is changing all the Chalav to milk powder, Chalav Yisrael milk powder. But in any case, in their at present, their chocolate bars say, I see, there's like Chalav Nachri that's, it's okay Chalav Nachri, or Afkan Chalav Nachri that's written in the middle of the ingredients. Personally, I don't like that because I think it's, it's not, the place is not in the ingredients, places in the kashrus. As to say, next to the kashrus, it says, kasher, bashkahad, so-and-so, mechi, Afkan Chalav Nachri. Yeah.
So when it says Afkan Chalav Nachri, besides for the fact that the kashrus problem, that it needs a hechsher in Chutz La'aretz for kashrus, is it also relying on the chalav companies, the other heterim for chalav akum?
Exactly, right. It's the question was, right, whenever you see mechil avkat chalav nachori, mechil avkat chalav nachori, whatever it'll say like that type of thing, it's relying on the heter of Rav Tzvi Tafank for avkat chalav nachori, or of Moshe Feinstein, if it's kasher bashkachad rabanut, then it has to be afka and not liquid. But yes, it's relying on those heterim. Okay. The third thing that we mentioned about again, we're still on the first part, but it's okay. The second part will be shorter. First part is raw milk. How do you tell about, right, we have Chalav Shabbat issues, Chalav Nachri issues, and the third thing is operations. I think it was about 15 years ago, there were a bunch of Kollel guys that went to some farms in upstate New York, and they found out that there were certain operations that are done on cows, because cows, sometimes they have stomach issues, and they're not eating right. If they're not eating right, they're not giving milk they should be giving. And so the doctors have to figure out, veterinarians have to figure out what they're doing in order to get the cow healthy again. So one of the ways of dealing with that is to do an operation on the cow, and one of the ways of doing the operation is to puncture one of the stomachs, to move the stomach down and to put it back into place, and then the cow can milk again for years sometimes and everything's fine. But the only minor problem is that you might have made the cow treifa. And what we said before, we said in the beginning, Hayotzei Asur is Asur. So if you have an animal that, if you knew that it was vade, became a treifa, it makes treif milk, right? So it ends up, so for a couple days in around the States, nobody knew what to do. You know, when the coal guys discovered this, everybody, you know, what are we supposed to do? So then, shortly afterwards, the major kashrus organization, the OU, the OK, I think the Star K, in terms of, Star K doesn't give on Chalav Nachri, today they have Star D, but I think even then they would give on what do you call Mosadi in English? Institutional, right? Commercial products, they do give on Chalav Nachri, and so they all got together and they're abonim, they're paskin, it's not a problem for, either because of Rove or because of most of the tree folk themselves, even when they're doing an operation, it's not an operation that's matri fit. Not clear exactly. There are many reasons. I think that Rabbi Gordimer from the OU has written about it on the OU site and explained why the OU was matir it. In any case, it happens to be an issue that Rav Weitman is very machmir on, my boss. And he, one of the main things that he instituted starting way, way back when in Tenuva was that there's got to be hashgacha on every operation that happens. And if you think it doesn't happen, it happens once in a while. So every single meeting that we have, every single mashgiach meeting we have, the guy who's responsible for operations gets on his beeper, and that takes precedence over everything. Doesn't matter what we're discussing, you send the mashgiach out, and it happens every time because these operations happen about in the hundreds, I mean like 600-700 times a year, which means that it's happening on the average more than once a day, and since they're not doing the operations on Shabbos, it happens a lot more. So what happened was is that the mashgichim, like this fellow here, he's a mashgiach, they get down and dirty, they go into the refet, they have to anyway go to the refet tov, they have to see what's going on there. Part of their job is to look at the cow and to see if it could be that there was an operation that was scheduled without telling us, because there's ways of telling if you look at the cow, the underside of the cow, whether it's shaved, whether there's chutim coming out or whatever it is. But when there is, and plus there's Baruch Hashem today, a very good relationship with the veterinarians, but in any case, the veterinarian makes a call to the Tenuva guy who is responsible for this, and there's a team of mashgichim, most of the mashgichim refatot, that goes and sees the operation. They're able to tell whether he's matrif or not. If they have a safek, they tell, they ledaveach, like what exactly they saw, and they're rabbanim paskin whether this cow is mutar or not. I wish I could tell you that I've been to these operations. Twice I was with a mashgiach and he was called for an operation, and twice I went with him and twice they canceled the operation when we got there. But I'm an office person, what can I do? But these guys, I've seen it hundreds of times. And so, Baruch Hashem, they're very skilled at it, and they're, you know, I can tell when they're talking that they know exactly what they're talking about. So, Baruch Hashem, we have what to rely on.
My understanding from Israel companies in the United States are also
mine. I think so. I know that when Rav Weitman makes a Chol Yisrael run in the States, it certainly is makpid. And I think it's known to people in the States also. When they're making a Chol Yisrael run, they're also checking into this. Because of course the Rav is right. In other words, you could if you don't check this, you can rely on the fact that there's a Rav, but you have to realize that it's not gonna help that it's Chol Yisrael if this is a real problem. So, in any case, this is happening in Tenuva every day, and it's a very important part of our hashgacha.
So, if they have the operation and the cow doesn't become a treif,
So they have to separate the cow. They have to. So either.
No,
no, it's not used for regular milk either. In other words, in terms of operations, that's all the milk supply that's coming into Tanuva. So that's controlled.
I understand it's why is it transistent to the numbers and computer each cow has a number?
Yeah.
So
the cow gets better. Why is it transistent?
How many years do you have?
So that's the question. Do you say, some people have said that treif means that it's going to die within the year, so therefore it's no longer a treif. So at least the psakim that the Rabbanim have given here is that, I would say, Rabbeinman said that he once asked, I think he asked Rabbi Yashi, that Rabbi Yashi said it wasn't even Baba Cheshbon. Like, in other words, that it's, because if you have, if it in fact made it treif, according to what Chazal said as a treif, then it doesn't matter, you don't start saying, according to the psakim that have been given here, you don't start saying, well, you know, how long does it live? If it's a treif, it's a treif. In other words, if it's been what's been done to it is defined as treifos, it's too late. That's at least the psak that's roveach here. So, okay, let me just check how much more we've got, because I want to know what to move along. Okay, let's just talk about this very quickly. Just basically speaking, when you take milk and you make cheese, and so you mix in. This actually is not a picture in Tanuva. It's a picture I got off the internet, and it's a good thing because I probably can't show you pictures of Tanuva, other than a couple I'll show you in a second. But this is not how it's made in Tanuva, but more or less, there's milk coming into here. There's all kinds of different ingredients we'll see in just a second about what these mean, but there's an enzyme and a culture, and there are these blades that are mixing it up and basically cutting, removing the cheese from the whey. The whey is the liquid that comes out of the cheese, and the cheese is the hard stuff, which, right? What does it mean, hard cheese, right? An enzyme, naturally speaking, they used to make cheese, hard cheese, I'm talking about like yellow cheese, by putting in, you know, the thing from the cow's stomach, which basically meant that, you know, some Arab years ago discovered that if you have, he had an animal that died. He took the stomach of the animal and filled it up with milk. And one day he discovered that the milk got all coagulated and got all hard. And he was wondering why in the world that happened. So it turns out that there's an enzyme in the lining of a calf's stomach that allows to break down the cheese. So what they used to do to make cheese, and still do in some places, is to take an extract from that cow stomach lining and throw it into milk, and that coagulates milk, and that's the starting point of making hard cheese. So that was used in kosher productions also under the circumstances when you knew 100% that it was all dried out. There's questions in the poskim at what point you can be matir. Basically you say it's pirsha ba'alma, that it's not basar chalav, it's not that. It turns out we don't use that today in kosher productions. Non-kosher productions, they can use it. Today, just one second, I'll get to you. Okay, sorry. Today, you make a copy of... You can use other materials that will do the same kind of process of clotting the milk. And today, it's made as a fermentation process, which means it's like there's a microbiological process. You have to use a lot of ingredients, and you have to have avshkach on that end of it, but you're not using anything that has to do with an animal. It's mimicking the same activity that the classical, what's called the rennet, did. It's a fake rennet or an engineered rennet, which becomes the same thing, whatever it is, but it's coming from all kosher sources. Yeah. What's that?
The gelatin.
Oh, it's sort of like the heter of gelatin. Right. Except that here, you're not here. Two things about that. One thing is that here you're taking an animal which is kosher, let's say, right? And you're drying out something which never was part of the basar, and using that as kosher and saying it's parith, and doesn't retain its fleshic status. Gelatin, sometimes you're taking a non-kosher animal like pig skin, and sometimes you're taking bones that could have been cooked together with the meat, and the taste went into the bones, and then you have... I was once in a gelatin factory, and it was mamish like they were making soup there when they were cleaning the bones, and so the bones became, you know. So even though, I mean, you're right, they're you know. So to tell you the truth, I'm not a posek, and I don't know exactly, but basically there are differences between this and that. In point of fact, it doesn't matter today because we're not using the classical enzyme. You're using rennet, which is made from vegetarian sources, so it's all kosher. So just for a second, there's at least two halachic issues about cheese that are different than other things. One is as a gzera of kvinat akum. I don't really have time to get into it, but very briefly, you can have chalav akum, which is one issue. You have kvinat akum. You can have milk that was milked by a Jew, and if a goy makes it into cheese, that's a separate gzera, and is usur. And so you have, and this, basically all kashrus organizations are makbid on. The OU also, when the OU makes hard cheese, they have a mashgiach that's putting the rennet, the vegetable rennet, but putting the rennet into the milk to make cheese, because you have to be makbid on gvinas akum, and that doesn't have the same heterim of Rav Moshe or anything, because it's not just a question of Yisrael ro'eu, there it's Givina, as long as it's defined as Givina Sakum, is Asr. So that's one issue. The question is whether, let's say, if you have just soured milk and not milk that's used with an enzyme, that's the case with cottage cheese and Givina Levana, things like that. That's the reason why, if you go into a store in the States, you'll see cottage cheese from a regular company, not just like a Jewish company that'll have a Hechsher, as opposed to hard cheese, it's almost always just a Jewish company because they're making it with an enzyme, and they have to have hashkacha tmidit, for the mashkiach to put in the rennet. The other issue of hard cheeses is the poskim talk about how long you have to wait between eating hard cheese and milk and fleishig, right? So one definition is given, right? When we talk about hard cheese, what is hard cheese? So some rabbanim say today we're not sure what's hard cheese. You have to assume any cheese, any yellow cheese, what we call hard cheese, is hard cheese, and you have to wait 6 hours between eating it and then eating meat. Rav Eichmann holds, and many, I think the OU and the Star K, I've seen on their sites, they hold that there's a difference between, the poskim talk about how long the cheese is hardened, how long it's ripened. That means this. This is not Tnuva Gehen, but this is somewhere in Italy, got it off the internet. You have, these are cheese blocks, and they're sitting and ripening. Ripening means that when the cheese, usually they have to have some sort of a coating that goes around the cheese that allows air in and not other air in or something like that. They have some sort of a method of how you either paint the cheese or wrap the cheese, whatever it is. The cheese has a way of aging and improving in flavor. By doing that, you're making the cheese, the solids in the cheese get more and more, and less liquid matter, more and more solid, and the taste gets very, very sharp. And so,
is that room refrigerated? Oops.
No, usually not. Usually dafka lehefich, it's sort of, a little bit heated. But it's also, it depends, because there could be part of the, some months they'll be cooling, and some months they'll be heating. It's, when you talk about Parmesan in Italy, it's probably could be aged for a year or more, whatever. Truth is that Tnuva does Parmesan also, Kashrut Regila, but does Parmesan, and that's aged for between 9 and 12 months, I think. And Tnuva used to do a product called Pecorino, which also was aged for months and months and months. The standard cheeses, Gilboa, Emek, Yerushalayim, Tiran, all those cheeses are not aged for more than 2 months. It's usually more like a month. And so like Rav Eichmann holds, you don't have to wait, between eating that cheese. That's not a real hard cheese. That's what I've also seen. Like the Star K site said that if you have a cheese that if you can slice it and it stays nicely together, that's not a hard cheese. If you have like Parmesan, if you try to slice it, it crumbles. So that was their definition. Rav Eichmann's definition is, what the post can talk about, is it 6 months or not? I think that Rav Avadia Yosef says you have to wait an hour for every month. So if that would be the case, then you would say that for something like Emek, it would be like an hour. Rav Eichmann holds, you don't have to wait, but for something like Parmesan, there's something else called Kashkeval, also something similar to that.
Is it ever noted on the Tnuva cheese that you have to wait 6 hours?
It doesn't say. The only thing, it's basically only this cheese, two cheeses. Parmesan and something called Kashkeval, which I forgot to put in here. This cheese, I just have to tell you, this cheese is not made by Tnuva. A friend of mine who's a mashgiach in Europe once gave it to me. His wife packed us a sandwich, and he said, "Try some real cheese." So he gives me this cheese. I couldn't even taste it, but I couldn't even get the smell off my hands after handling it for a couple minutes. I had to wash my hands with soap and water. I couldn't get it. It was really, really strong. And so you could tell what Chazal meant when they talked about hard cheese. So, but the Pashtus is, you know, the Revitman holds that if, you know, the standard cheeses that we buy, you don't have to wait because they haven't been aged anywhere near as long as, and you know, he also holds that if it's on a supermarket shelf someplace, it's not developing taste at the same rate as it is in, you know, in this room. So therefore, it's not really, you know, there's no substitute for the aging process. You can't add any chemicals to make it go faster. So that's a real difference between the two.
If you melt Parmesan cheese, like eggplant Parmesan, and then that's considered hard cheese?
So that's a question. And I know it is a good question. The question is, if you melt Parmesan cheese, does that still have a din of a hard cheese? In terms of waiting between the milk, I think so, but I know it's been asked, but I don't know. I don't know to tell you the truth. I believe that.
So if a dairy restaurant has, let's say, a and they have eggplant parmesan, where is that cheese coming from?
Don't know. It's not from Tanuva. That I know.
What are you using?
They're usually, by the way, even good pizzas, as far as I know, even the good pizzerias, they're not using parmesan, they're using mozzarella. And mozzarella is aged much, much less. Okay. Let me just see. Okay. Just gonna move along, yeah? Okay, I'm sorry. We'll just finish up very quickly. This actually happens to be stuff that I do, but that's the second part of the equation. You have the raw milk that we talked about before, Chalav Nachri, Chalav Shabbat, operations. Then we have what other raw materials are used in dairy products. Basically, these first two, whenever you want to make any dairy product, especially if it's going to be soured, a sour dairy product, you don't sour it by leaving it outside and letting it sour naturally. You add something, you basically do the opposite. You pasteurize the milk and you take out most of the bacteria that would naturally sour it, and instead you add in your own bacteria that you want. These bacteria are made only in Chutz Laaretz. No one in Israel also knows how to make that. That's called a machmetzet in Hebrew, a culture in English. A starter culture to make cheese. It basically just has the function of making, of souring milk. So basically these things have to have kashrut, because in industry, when you make a culture, you're adding all kinds of ingredients milk ingredients. And the question is, what are the ingredients that you're using? So you have to check that these are kosher. And emulsifiers, that's basically for another time, because that's varying flavors. Is next week with Rabbi Schutz. Fruits, when you look at a yogurt or something that has a fruit in it, it's not natural. It's not just a fruit. It's a processed fruit, which means it's a fruit that's coming with starch, fruits, flavors, stabilizers. Stabilizers is another one, which could be gelatin. There's all kinds of things that you have to worry about in terms of kashrut. Some of these have to do specifically with dairy products, especially the first two, cultures and enzymes, but some of them, all of these, are used for everything. Emulsifiers is very big in baking products. Fruits are used in baking products. Any cake that you see that has a fruit filling, it's not that somebody's taking a strawberry and pushing it into there. They're getting a processed fruit that has been made with all kinds of other things in it, and so all those things have to be checked carefully for kashrut. Just mamish a word about Pesach cleaning. You'd think that milk has no issues with Pesach. It turns out that I've been working on Pesach for since I would say last Pesach, whatever. I've been working on Pesach. So this is a very good friend of mine, and I told you guys before about the mashgiach that goes for Chutz Laaretz. He's one of the most dedicated mashgiach that I know. His name is Tzvi Aginsky. This is a powder dosing system. It isn't Tnuva, don't tell anybody I told you, but you can't really see anything anyway here, but this is when it's dirty, and this is when all the parts have been taken out and are cleaned, because you have a lot of powders that are used in any kind of stabilizers that are used in puddings or yogurts or anything. A lot of them are based on either wheat starch or wheat starch products, and so they are chametz, and they have to be cleaned. And it's a very big job to clean it. They're not cleaning it yet, but they will be in another month. So So and my job is to make sure the ingredients are okay. So I've got to worry about chutz laaretz that they've done this kind of cleaning a month ago, or 2 months ago, 3 months ago, whatever it was. So so it turns out that Pesach is a very big deal, and Baruch Hashem, every single food company in Israel wants to make all their products kosher for Pesach, because it's not like in the States when, you know, the company will say give it or leave it, because, you know, what's a big deal? It's a week. Here, if you lose out a week of Pesach, you're losing out a week before, a week after, you lose the supermarket shelf space. It's a very big deal. So maybe they won't try to make everything mahadrin for Pesach, but they'll try to make every single product kosher for Pesach. It means that every single yogurt, strawberry and cream, and blueberry and blue, every single one has to have a Pesach version, because there's always flavors in it, and flavors are never kosher the Pesach, so always have to do the whole thing. And this kind of a cleaning, it's a very big deal, even in the milk industry. That's it. So they all have, if it's from Tenuva, it all has. Oh, I'm sorry. The question is, how come some containers of milk don't have any heksher at all? So at least from Tenuva, they all have a heksher. Sometimes it might be hard to find, but you'll always see on the side kosher mashka. Call me. I don't know of such a thing, but call me if you see it. I'll leave Yechiel my number or whatever in the office. It's not a problem. You can call me. Hard for me to believe, but you know, there have been tekalot before.
Specifically, Pesach, I just knew the deal with. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but the idea of if the cows eat chametz, and the majority of their food is chametz, it could affect the milk.
Right. So it's a whole discussion into itself. But for 2 minutes, so the cows can't eat chametz on Pesach. Before Pesach is not a problem, because they don't, the chametz, you don't say halachically that the chametz is going into the milk. What you're worried about is two things. One is that the chametz in their food is somehow getting into the milk. It won't get into your milk that you'll drink, but in the milk tank on the farm, you don't want like a kavush issue that it's, you know, it's gonna be, you have a problem with the milk there. So that's enough to take care of by making sure that the milk is very well mesunan, very, very well filtered, right? But you don't have to worry about the cow eating milk, except for you don't want to be nene from chametz on Pesach. So in order to do that, for a couple of weeks before Pesach, the mashkichim are going around, and then you have more mashkichim that are going around and checking the food, checking the places that are making food for the cows, and making sure that they're using, the cows are svardi, they're supposed to be them to eat kinyot, but they don't eat chametz on Pesach. But they don't have to worry about making products for Pesach 6 months before Pesach that are from milk, because you're not being nana on from chametz on Pesach.
You talked a little bit about the OUD, because I know that the Mahajan Ashkafas are very against the OU because of their maple on Kolach Nachman. And so in America, people trust the, you know, people eat the Hershey's, but you're saying it's a milk chocolate, it has milk. So the OU gives it an Ashkafa. Right, it's considered the Ashkafa in America, but even the Rabbi Nuri Hershey, which is a very low level, wouldn't give it. So why is it so much more machmir?
Because Halabako.
Well,
why is the Rabbi Nuri Hershey more machmir than the OU? That's the question.
No, in something, it's a very interesting point you brought me right up, right? Bring up. It's I would say there are some issues. I'm an OU person myself, to, you know, going back. So the truth is that the knowledge that's in the OU, I don't think anybody else has. You know, the OU is a tremendous amount of knowledge. They're paskening halachos, some halachos that's not popular to pasken that way here. So in terms of the expertise is there. In terms of the chumras and halacha, a lot of times you're right. The rabbanut is more machpid on afias Yisrael, on Bishul Yisrael.
So you understand it. They want to be machmir on things that are Jewish, even though halachically the OU is more machmir than the Rabbi Nuri Hershey.
Halachically,
things that are Jewish, they want to be.
It's two different issues. One issue is competence in terms of knowing what you're doing. The OU, I have a lot of respect for, because they're saying what they're doing. OUD means you have to assume it's halach nachri. You want it? Good. You don't want it? Also good. But you have to say what it is. Question is, when a Rabbanut is very, very machmir, are they doing what they say they're doing? That's another question.
I'd like to thank Rabbi Bobo for schlepping out. And me personally, I was very happy to hear it because I get emails literally every day. People write, it's dairy, what could be wrong? I think in a 2-hour presentation, I think you, Baruch Hashem, gave us a very good overview of a very comprehensive field that only grows and gets more complex as chemicals and flavors and stabilizers grow. I hope the Tzibur did benefit. I imagine the Rav's not running out the second. If you want to hop him and get another question, you can. I remind you that next week is Rav Bezalel Schutz, and as Rav Bobo said too, this is not a person you get to hear often. He is schlepping from a fula to come here. And this is a person with a walking database. This is a person, people from around the world pick his mind about kashrus and halacha, of his specialties that he's gained this knowledge working with Rav Landau for over 2 decades. Kedai to come as well.
Did it come out, you think? I hope so, yeah, now.